You know, and you have one, for example, where you list movies. And Gone with the Wind calibrates, I think, at 400, the same as Toy Story. And some people would say, well, Gone with the Wind is such a wonderful epic, and Toy Story is a silly little children's. But again, context, right?
Yeah, well, you know, so the calibrated level of consciousness is not an artistic judgment, okay? Not artistic, or a political or monetary judgment. It's just, what is the energy of that as compared to the absolute? Then it takes reflection to understand why would the energy be, you know, at what it is.
Right. So to encapsulate what your lesson is in this session, it's really about looking at intention in context. Taking
historical
away judgment.
Context, developmental context, in the context of the evolution of human consciousness where it is now. See, the same act done by different people at different levels of consciousness can be horrific, kindly, brave, courageous, or praiseworthy. Same act, but in different people's hands. Yeah? Mm-hmm. So when we calibrated guns, we were surprised. Guns come out at 200. That's neutral. Knives, daggers come out at 200. You say, but aren't those weapons? They should calibrate low. Weaponism is in the head of the wielder. A gun in and of itself is just a piece of steel laying there not doing anything. It was just a learning study, see? It was research. And all research turns up data that are not known. Otherwise, you wouldn't be doing the research. If people knew the difference between truth and falsehood, the book never would have been written. Because people would instantly see what a thing is. The human mind is blind. It's limited with perception. It can't see essence. It can't see essence. It only sees the cover of the book and not the content. So because of that limitation, that's what Socrates said. Every man seeks what he perceives to be the good, what he perceives the good. But what he perceives to be the good may have nothing at all to do with what is essentially good, you know.
So as far as a practical application, it would be wonderful for the listeners to start to explore, to start doing some calibration.
Yeah, well, of course, the people who did all this research also frequently came across amazing results.
Mm-hmm. And to test against your list, perhaps, to say, okay, if I've got a bag with Pepsi and a bag with Coke and I don't know which one, and I'm going to calibrate and we'll see. Is that beneficial then for us to start exploring this in our own little
lab? People have, out of their own curiosity, will be led to their own areas of interest, you see. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But no, things came out of that that were quite surprising to the research team. And those that were, quite out of what we expected were rechecked over and over again.
Mm-hmm. And you have a specific research team you use, or do you use different people at different times?
It's done all over the world now in different cultures, you know. We were in Korea, for instance, and it's very common there. Mm-hmm. See a couple shopping, and they're in the grocery store. She picks up the oranges, and he presses down on her arm, and if her arm goes weak, they don't buy those oranges. It's just routine. I mean, it's just a very simple thing. You know, some people are adept at it, like riding a bicycle. Some people are adept at it. Other people are not. Other people are not interested. You know, if you have intellectual curiosity, you know, it's an extremely curious thing. I've been through the intellectual world about as much as you can go through the intellectual world. Mm-hmm. And just from an intellectual viewpoint, I said, wowie, hey, this is something. I was snagged by it. Mm-hmm. Just out of intellectual curiosity, you know, no spiritual or moral positionality about it. It's not a moral issue, you know. It was like anything else in medicine, because I discovered it as part of my own research in holistic medicine. I was looking for every single thing that could possibly benefit a patient. Mm-hmm. Everything's physical, mental, and spiritual, and I always used all three of them. And so anything that was new on the horizon, I had to check it out. What benefit could this be to the patients? And we did all kinds of things. You know, we had a holistically oriented psychiatric clinic. I had the largest psychiatric practice in the United States, 2,000 outpatients and 1,000 new patients a day, and 50 people working for me, two floors, all kinds of laboratories, research stuff. So we got the toughest cases from around the world. The easy ones we didn't see. So if we got a case of hopeless schizophrenia, this person had already seen every famous name in the country, in the world. So it was means they, we had to be constantly on the search for innovative new directions, because they've been through the routine mail. Well, if it wasn't picked up in the routine mail, then there's something, see? I can remember talking to a patient with chronic hopeless schizophrenia who had seen everybody and done everything and had every kind of treatment. As I'm talking to him, I could tell he was, you know, hopelessly, really chronically psychotic. All of a sudden, within my mind, out of absolute silence, arose Mercury. Uh-oh, I thought he's mad as hatter. He's mad as a hatter. Right. In the old days, hatters used to go mad from mercury poisoning, from licking the brush. And so we got a blood level on mercury and urinary level, and sure enough. And then his work history, he had spent a summer spraying insecticides in orchards and stuff, and he had arsenic poisoning, mercury poisoning. And so he was mad as a hatter because he had mercury poisoning. So that we picked that up out of a hair test. Well, hair tests weren't part of routine medical practice, and a lot of people still poo-poo them. Hair tests has to be taken in the overall context. He was mad as a hatter due to chronic mercury poisoning, and so we chelated out the mercury, and he recovered, you see, hopeless case. So therefore, you see, just even one example like that, it increases your interest in checking out what's new and novel and developmental. So kinesiology was just another new way of diagnosing and helping. And we tried it. We'd say, you know, Thorazine is good for this patient with schizophrenia or not, see? So we tried to use every technique available on the horizon that might have a beneficial applicability to mental illness, because my devotion as a physician was to the help of the patient. I'm not here to please my colleagues and get applause or approval from fellow professionals. I couldn't care less. When I meet God, I'm going to be faced with, did I do all that I could by my oath to help my patient to the best of my ability? So I've always felt obliged to that. So when I saw kinesiology, I thought, wow, this is something we could diagnose maybe what's making him ill or what would help him more. Every new thing that came down the pike, I had to check it out, and we added. So at the clinic that I ran, we had, you know, half a dozen things weren't being done anywhere. Cerebral allergy and dilute solutions of substances under the tongue. I can remember patients saying they're perfectly normal. We put dilute 1 to 20,000 something, a few drops of potato under his tongue. He instantly became completely delusional and psychotic. Well, science poo-pooed that at the time. Science poo-pooed hypoglycemia. You know, I can remember, we had our own clinical laboratory as well as research laboratory. And the lab director was about 6'5", like Ichabod Crane, big and skinny with his long white coat. When her blood sugar dropped down to a certain point, she suddenly became psychotic. She tore off all her clothes and ran down the sidewalk of the main street. And behind her is this Ichabod Crane, big, tall, skinny lab guy with a white coat flying behind him. He's shaking her, chasing her down. And she's running wildly naked down the street, and traffic is jammed in both directions. Now, you know, there are people that poo-poo hypoglycemia. Well, who should I believe? So we took her off sugar and sweets, and of course she recovered. So that's how I got into kinesiology and the investigation and the research. And then when I, of course, because of my own personal experience, was quite interested in how to apply this to spiritual truth and spiritual reality and of what benefit to mankind. And then this book, Truth Versus Falsehood, was following the previous books. The previous books were concerned with spiritual reality as an inner experience and a historical fact. And this, I said, well, what if we took calibrated the level of truth of everything in society? So we went into the world. As I say, I wasn't very interested in the world itself. I was interested in helping patients, but the world itself I wasn't really interested in. We said, what happens if we took this into the world and started doing everything, geography and countries and people and politics and great works of art and music and cathedrals of Europe? And let's just take a measure of truth and go through our civilized world and see what shows up. That's all we did. And then we reported what we found. Whether people like it or not is their problem.